Chapter 23. Primitive processes. The primitive industries of a primitive people are always interesting to the student. They often reveal more than appears at first sight. We, with our present knowledge of improved mechanical methods, stand and watch an Indian silversmith or potter, and we laugh at the crudity of the methods employed, naturally comparing them with our own. But this is not the proper way to look upon the work of the Aborigine. Rather let the gazer imagine himself without any of his advanced knowledge. Let him project himself in two past ages, and find himself groping his way out of the darkness of primitive ignorance. He will find himself seeking for many centuries, ere he invents and discovers even the rude processes used today by the Indian. As an inventor, the Aborigine has laid us under great obligation, for he discovered the first steps of mechanical progress, without which all later steps would have been impossible. Hopi pottery. In the Hopi house, the processes of making pottery and silverware by primitive methods may be seen in active operation, though in the manufacture of silver, some modern appliances have taken the place of the ancient ones. In the pottery, however, everything is exactly as it used to be before the white race appeared on the American continent. The Hopi woman brings her clay with her from some pitter quarry in Hopi land, where experience has demonstrated a good pottery clay is found. After thoroughly washing, pulverizing and crushing, it is ready to be worked up into domestic and other utensils. Squatted upon the ground, the potter places in her lap a small basket, wood, or pottery base, upon which she places a ab of clay. This she thumbs and pats, until it forms the basis of the new vessel. Then another piece of clay is rapidly rolled between her hands, until it is in the form of a long rope. This rope is then coiled around the edge of the base already made, pressed well into it, and then smoothed down. After four or five coils of clay are thus added, the potter takes a small pat, generally a piece of dried gourd skin, dips it into water, and proceeds to smooth out and make thin the clay coils. As quickly and dexterously as can be, her hands and the spat manipulate the vessel, until it has the desired shape. More coils of clay are then added, and the shaping continues until the vessel is complete. Now it is put out into the sun to dry, and when reasonably solid, it is ready for the painting and decoration. With a rude brush made of horsehair yucca fiber, and paint scattered and ground by herself, she works out the design that her imagination has already created and pictured upon her piece of work. Some of these designs represent conventionalized objects of nature: birds, clouds, mountains, rain, corn, lightning, tadpoles, dragonflies, horned toads, serpents and the like. Others are purely geometrical, and the variety and extent of them are more wonderful than any except the experts realize. In a monograph upon the ancient pottery of these people, Dr. Fuchs pictures every known geometrical figure of ancient and modern times, all of which were copied by him from vessels that have been excavated from ancient ruins and graves. The pottery of Nampeyo. Every village has its own style of pottery. Among the Hapas, the finest potter is a resident of Tiwaraino, Nampeyo by name. Her ware is characterized by beauty of shape, perfection of form, dignity and character in design, and a general appearance that is pleasing and artistic. Zunai pottery is of a superior quality to that of Acoma, Laguna, and the other villages nearby, and often contains in its designs the deer, with its peculiar red line of throat leading to the heart. Black pottery. At Santo Domingo and Santa Clara, pueblos on the Rio Grande, a black ware is produced that is effective and strongly decorative in certain pieces. Ancient varieties. Ancient ware, dug from ruins and graves, is exceedingly rare and commands a high price. There are three distinguishable varieties, among others, that denote comparative age. The earliest type is of the corrugated ware, in which the thumb and finger marks, denoting the pressure of the coils, one upon another, are clearly in evidence. Some pottery was made in basket matrices, and marks of the basket are clearly outlined upon the outside of the vessel so made. The second type is the plain black and white ware, and the third is the red ware painted with black designs. Both ancient and modern ware, the latter in large variety, may be seen and purchased at the Hopi House. Navajo silverware. Of equal interest is the making of silverware by the Navajo Peshlikai, or silversmith, whose primitive forge is in the first room entered at the Hopi House. Fondness for silver. The innate desire of a primitive people for personal adornment early led the Pueblo Indians to a use of metal. When the Spaniards and Mexicans came among them, the iron, brass and copper of the conquerors were soon added to the dried seeds, shell beads, pieces of turquoise and coral they had hitherto used. But silver has ever been their favorite metallic ornament. Long ago they formed an ideal in the Spanish Don or Mexican vaquero, with his personal apparel adorned with silver, his horse's bridle trapped out with silver belts, buckles and buttons, and his saddle and its equipment studded with silver nails, and other fanciful expressions of adornment. From the Mexican and the Pueblo Indian he rapidly picked up the necessary knowledge, and practice soon gave the skill to fashion the silver into every desired shape. Navajos used silver 3 centuries ago. Cushing contends that the Zunas knew how to smelt metals before the Spanish conquest, but the statement is strongly disputed. There can be no question, however, but that the large use of silver ornaments by both Pueblo and Navajo Indians dates from 350 years ago, after Coronado's conquistadors had found out that this was no land of gold and precious metals, as was Peru. In almost every Pueblo of Arizona and New Mexico, and in many a Navajo hogan, one may find the primitive silversmith at work. There is no silversmith's shop, but generally in a corner of the quaint Pueblo house, or in an adjunct to the Navajo hogan, the worker quietly pursues his important avocation. For in a community whose members have no other metallic arts, the silversmith is an important man, and sees to it that his profession is regarded with the high dignity it deserves. Method of working. With a rude mud forge, the bellows of which, though primitive, is as ingenious as any patent bellows invented. A hammer, a piece of railroad steel for an anvil, a three-cornered file, 1 or 2 punches, a crucible which he understands how to make as well as the best metallurgist in the land, and a bit of solder, he goes to work. Sometimes he runs his melted Mexican dollars in 2 primitive molds. Again he hammers the metal into the shape he requires. He creates rings, some of them containing rude pieces of turquoise, garnet, etc., well-designed bracelets, belt discs, large and small silver buttons, some of which are admirably adapted for belt buckles, earrings, necklaces, crosses, beads, bangles, clasps of silver for bridles, etc., ornaments and jewelry. The 2 most cherished objects are the waist belt and the necklace, though far more rings and bracelets are to be found. But this is on account of the great expense of the former. The waist belts generally consist of 8 molded plates, either circular or oval, with filleted border and scalloped edges, each plate weighing from 2 to 4 ounces. These are punctured in the center, or a small band is soldered to the back, to admit of their being threaded upon a long and narrow belt of leather, the ends of which are fastened with a buckle. Both men and women wear these, and they are highly prized as ornaments by both sexes. The necklaces are equally in vogue, the designs being principally hollow beads, crosses, and ornaments representing pomegranate blossoms. The silver bridle is also an object of great esteem. It is made of curiously designed, heavy clasps of silver, fastened upon leather, with numberless buttons shaped from coins. Many of these weigh not less than 15 ounces, and some as high as 40, hence their value can be readily estimated. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.